The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It is wall-to-wall Fine Gael in the news this morning. Analysis of Leo Varadkar's leadership, discussions about Simon Harris's future, pages upon pages of newsprint dedicated to it. To go through all of it, I am joined by Mark Hennessy, who is Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times, Ciara Phelan, who is senior political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, and Frances Fitzgerald, FG MEP for Dublin, who of course recently announced her intention to step down as an MEP. This is before Simon Harris started his campaign to get everybody who is stepping down to have another shot at running for election. Will you be returning to the Dáil, Frances, as part of this wave for Simon Harris?
Certainly not returning to Europe. That decision totally stands. But you're absolutely right. Wall to wall on Fine Gael. Can't be bad. Every newspaper, both about Leo leaving and Simon taking over, and lots of analysis. A very interesting piece by Hugh O'Connell, page 9 of the Indo, with some great quotes, I think, from Leo in it as well. You know, he said he wasn't interested in discussing his legacy. That's for years down the line. Rubbish will be written about me now. You know, it's the future will decide how I'm seen. And he also talked about this struggle going from number one to number two. You know, from Taoiseach to Tánaiste, to nobody had ever done it before, and the adjustment that was involved in that. So it's a...
There's an interesting response to that by Eoin O'Malley, and I think the same paper, where he says, Leo Varadkar has made very clear that his legacy won't be defined for several years, but I'll have a shot at it this weekend nonetheless.
Lots of people are.
Yeah, let's follow his example. Mark, let's start with that, with the departing of Leo Varadkar. 7 years, the up-and-coming thing, an awful lot of the papers saying the man who was going to re-energise and rescue the party who just ran out of steam.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true. Although I do think that there's probably a wider lesson to be drawn from it, that in all of these jobs now, there is 7 or 8 years left in most people in the tank, and that he won't be the first or last to leave a high office. And a lot of people are coming in.
You don't think he's unusual? I mean, the fact that he was a medical doctor, first of all, that he had a separate career if he wanted to go to it, that he always had the whiff of... I mean, he said himself he didn't want to be in politics until he was after 50.
He always said that...
But is he not unusual in that? Do you think that's going to be the norm?
I think there's a lot of people in both in politics and in other trades who reach high office. You know, if you go through the figures and see how long the average CEO lasts or whatever, you know, that period is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And equally, you know, I think people are looking on the political system in a slightly different thing. If you contrast the kind of genuine national engagement that took place at the time when Bertie stepped down in 2007, I don't think that's been replicated in terms of the public conversations that have taken place about Varadkar in 2024. And that's not a criticism of him. I think just the world is more jaded, other things to do, a surfeit of information coming at people in today's world, and an awful lot of people saying, you know, who cares? You know?
And what's the legacy, Ciara?
Oh, well, when you are trying to think this week of what exactly that Leo Varadkar did, my mind goes back to a few things. One, at the beginning of his career, he was dubbed a straight talker. That quickly changed over the years. People, and he was criticised for comments he'd made, faux pas. You know, a lot of people would have called him quickly Leo the Liability. A few controversies that we don't necessarily have to get into today, but everybody knows them at the top of their head. But I think when you look back at his legacy, people will reflect on the steadiness he brought during the COVID-19 pandemic at the beginning. I think that's what a lot of people will remember the current Taoiseach with. And then you have to think about the economy and the state that we are at the moment in terms of full employment. And obviously he was in that department, he was Taoiseach, assisted by many others. But you have to look as well at the homelessness crisis, the housing crisis, for the period that Fine Gael have been in government. And that is what will stick to Leo Varadkar.
To some extent, Mark, I'd like your view on this. Do you think that to some extent Leo Varadkar wishes that people cared more about the things that he seems to care about in his legacy? There's a regular reference to both the handling of Brexit and the handling of COVID. In both instances, you can say, yeah, they were probably objectively relatively well managed. Hard to see that people care.
Yeah, well, I mean, what
do they? Does anybody wake up saying, "Well, thank God we got well steered through Brexit"?
No.
Yeah, there are times you kind of think. Then
businesses do.
Yeah, to an extent, you have to think if people don't care about things like that, then that says more about them than it does about Varadkar. The reality is that the handling of Brexit by the government of the time, and this goes back to Kenny, to his credit, on day one, getting some of the big calls correct. Varadkar got a lot of those calls correct. Their messaging, Simon Coveney, others, was superb during that period of Brexit, and it contrasted on a daily basis with the Conservatives flaying around. And, you know, people can take that kind of thing for granted, but it wasn't guaranteed. So, you know, let's criticise Powell's on all the occasions when they deserve it and be equally generous enough to give them credit when they get something right.
I believe people do care about COVID and do care about Brexit. If there had been a hard border on the island of Ireland, you'd have had a lot of people caring about it.
Yeah.
I think people were very aware of the international reputation that we were able to lean on during Brexit. Yeah. That was really important. And I mean, the anxiety levels during COVID, there was great reassurance from the government at the time. We've had better outcomes than the UK and many other places. So I do believe that that's appreciated within the psyche of the Irish people.
By a certain cohort, I think the most important thing for the Irish public is the amount of money they have in their pocket, whether they have a roof over their head and whether they can get an appointment to see their GP.
Oh, there's no doubt it's day-to-day issues now. It's inflation, cost of living. Yeah. It's providing more houses. I mean, this is what, going on to Simon, this is what he absolutely wants to focus on.
But to say that those things that Ciara's mentioned are the important is absolutely true, but it doesn't mean that other things aren't equally true and important. And one of the things that, you know, my previous experience in London, drawing on that, I was always struck by both with all three of the major politicians of the time, with Varadkar, Coveney and with Micheál Martin, how so many people at a senior level within the Conservatives had such a problem dealing with paddies who were giving them lip, you know, and this just actually fundamentally couldn't understand how the Irish state had agency to decide what it
is that the Irish state wanted to do in its
own interest. That simply couldn't be absorbed by them, and that needed people to put across messages in clean, tidy ways. And credit where credit is due.
The level of competence surprised everybody, and of course the Conservatives more than anyone. No, absolutely no doubt about that.
I'm joined this morning by Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times, Francis Fitzgerald, FGMEP for Dublin, and Ciara Phelan, senior political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. If that's Leo Varadkar's legacy, the question is, what of Simon Harris's future? That all started, Francis, I believe, tucked under your wing originally.
That is true. He applied for a job when I got the new position as leader of the opposition in the Senate. I got an email in or a note from Simon saying he would like to work in politics. I met him in Boswell's.
Informally, youth at the time?
20. So I know him for 17 years. Seen him going from working, with me as PA to while he was working with me, he went for councillor in Wicklow, was successful, I think one of the highest votes ever, and then went from that to eventually going in as a Minister of State in the OPW, and then joined Cabinet eventually. So I ended up being in Cabinet with him. So I saw his trajectory over the 17 years and never lost his absolute fascination, I would say, with politics, interest in politics. And, you know, he's very hardworking and his commitment to it.
Would you have tipped him for Taoiseach when he arrived in at 20?
Would I have tipped him as Taoiseach? I would have tipped him as somebody who was very bright, very interested and very ambitious in the best sense of that word. So would I have thought of Taoiseach? Maybe not initially, but certainly fairly quickly. You could see it. I always knew he'd go very far in politics.
He now has his work cut out, and part of the work that he has cut out is deciding who is getting which gig. Ciara, you might have some views on this, because there's an analysis in the Mail which says who will go where in Fine Gael's cabinet game of thrones, and they have split it up into those who are facing promotion, those who are safe, which boils down to Pascal Donoghue and Patrick O'Donovan, and those who are in danger.
There's many opportunities. The conversation happening within Leinster House at the moment is the fate of Enterprise Minister Simon Coveney. Whether he's going to be kept on in Cabinet, I think that Simon Harris and his team will go to you know, his party colleagues who he may have in mind for promotion and seek a commitment from them whether they're going to run in the next election. That is a
well, he's already put this message out, hasn't he? That you, if you either give me the commitment that you're running or you're not going to be in a top job.
It's very interesting. Leo Varadkar did that, the cabinet reshuffle as well. And here we have Leo Varadkar bowing out politics. Coveney, people have been wondering for some time whether he's going to run in the next general election. He has said in interviews, you know, at Christmas time before that, that he was. However, you know, how this works. If you say, no, I'm going to bow out, that completely takes your authority away from you, lack of power, etc. Simon Harris is going to want a commitment from people that they are going to be on his team and fine to ensure that Fine Gael are back up in support in the polls at around 25%.
So who's toast?
Well, look, I don't know exactly how Simon Harris' mind is working right now, but if I was to take a guess, I would say that there would be some movement. I'd say Justice Minister Helen McEntee might be moved out of that brief.
Might be moved out of cabinet or
no?
Moved
she'll
out of
remain
brief.
In cabinet, but she may be moved elsewhere. The papers are all speculating that she may actually go into the brief that he currently holds, which is further in higher education. Peter Burke, junior minister. Also, Junior Minister Jennifer Carol McNeill and Neil Richmond, they could all be in contention for a promotion to cabinet. That will also mean that there could be movement elsewhere. Pascal Donoghue, it seems that he will be safe. And I think that a lot of people would appreciate that Pascal Donoghue would remain in his position as Public Expenditure Minister. There has been a good relationship there between himself and the Finance Minister, Michael McGrath. They have a good working relationship.
Before we continue with the breakdown of where everybody might go, on the topic of good working relationships, we were led to believe, Francis, that Pascal Donoghue and Leo Varadkar had an extremely close personal relationship. And some of the coverage this weekend pointing to the fact that the first that Pascal heard about Leo's departure was when everybody else heard about Leo's departure, which left him in a position where he had no opportunity to get the jump on Simon Harris. Had he the desire to be
leader. That is a little bit simplistic. I mean, if Pascal wanted the job, Pascal's well capable of getting out there whenever he heard the news. And it's very clear that Leo shared it with almost, you know, the tiniest to the other two leaders.
Were they not close enough
and
that
Simon
you might have thought he might have mentioned?
Sure, you could have said that about his relationship with quite a number of people.
Then
you
the
know.
Story would have become Leo gives Pascal a furlong at the start. So.
Yes. Yes.
So who's going where then, Mark? What about can we live without, or can the party live without anybody in Cork if you're Simon Harris?
No, I think there has to be a Cork place there, given the geography and given the political context. Again, Coveney's own appetite for it is somewhat in question. I was down there last week. Certainly the locals seem to be certain at this point that he was running in Cork East, not in his old constituency. And that will be interesting to see. Heather Humphreys clearly has bagged and tagged her places on foot of her connections with him. Not necessarily nationally known by a lot of people at large. Well regarded by officials, and we're around long enough to know that if you ever hear officials talking in a complimentary fashion about ministers, it's time to get worried. In her case, actually, it's somewhat different, that there's a genuine respect for somebody who can be a bit of a ball breaker and who can go through files at a rate of knots. Now, her public image for a social media world might be a little too country for urban tastes in some senses. So we'll see how that works out. But Fine Gael has a huge job to do with its rural links because it has badly, badly lost connection. It now faces a threat from independents coming from a farming background in quite a few constituencies. They feel that the Greens have, you know, just become lightning rods in rural Ireland. Eamon Ryan is a hate figure for so many people in a way that, you know, it's kind of odd if you actually knew Eamon Ryan. But anyway, so clearly they need somebody to be the voice of rural Ireland, and that is Heather.
Well, this is interesting because it goes to the priorities that are outlined on the front of the Business Post. Harris vows to prioritise business, law and order and farming in what he's describing, or what's being described as the moment of Fine Gael reset and back to basics. there isn't a lot of time to fix all of those issues, Francis Fitzgerald. I mean, the law and order issue, they ain't going to get that solved in 18 months. They're not going to get housing solved
true.
In 18
I
months.
I mean, the timing, I mean, there's questions about the timing, but it's only 10 weeks or so to the local and European elections. So, I mean, we certainly, in terms of expectations, one has to be aware of how very short that is. On the other hand, what Simon has to do is he has to reset, he's to re-energise, he has to focus on different priorities, back to basics, as he calls it. We are up 2% in that poll. Interestingly, given what Mark said there about connecting with rural Ireland and the independents.
You're still languishing miles behind where the party once was,
and significantly
behind Sinn Féin.
5% above Fianna Fáil, 5% below Sinn Féin. So at least, you know, going in the right direction. But the interesting point in that poll as well is that the independents are down. That point Mark was making about connecting with the rural base. The independents are down 3 in that. But yes, the timing is very short. And I believe he has to think sort of short, medium and long term. I mean, how much we can regain by the time of the Europeans. I would expect a bounce in the European and locals, but I think we would have to be cautious in terms of expectations because, you know, there's a lot of work to do at the moment. It's been a very difficult time for Fine Gael. I think Leo has clearly been thinking about this decision for a number of months, I would say, and that's been sort of picked up within the party. And so there is a re-energising. But if anybody can do it, Simon can do it.
We spoke yesterday to Frank Flannery, the former Fine Gael strategist, and I asked him the same question about what can Harris achieve? And he also talked about energy. How does the energy of the man who's leading the party get houses built?
It doesn't, but that's
the point is you have to give hope. Yes. That's incredibly important. The energy, I believe leadership matters hugely. So the energy of the leader, the commitment, I mean, Simon is extremely good at relating to people. That's why you had councillors, senators, TD, you had every section of the party because he has done the work all over the country. He, you know, people say, oh, he's very urban. Actually, he's been all over rural Ireland connecting with people.
Mark,
so that matters.
That matters hugely.
Harris
has been on a country tour every Friday for God knows how long. And he's always ended up in some school. And that's the bit that ends up on TikTok and whatever else. Probably the more important stuff is the stuff that you never see on TikTok, which is Harris dealing with local councillors and party activists. In terms of confidence, first of all, matters within a party. If you want a leader who walks into a room, who gives a buzz to the people who are in the room. Now, Leo had got to a point where that moment had passed. It passes for everybody in time. It had passed for him. Harris has the opportunity to do that now. The local and Europeans is not about producing necessarily a successful result, but presenting a result that can be shown to people in a believable way that it would have been a lot worse if the other fellow was here.
If you're 18 months out from having to knock on the doors and you knock on the door and the person says, look, my 30-year-old child is still living in the house because they can't afford to put a home over their head, the answer, well, look at Simon Harris, he's fierce, enthusiastic, doesn't butter much in the way of Paris.
No, but it's also about policy, Anton. It is also about a commitment to policy.
We've spoken about time here, but although he has a small window, he can do a lot in that time. He can show where he intends to move. And I think that Leo Varadkar, that PP meeting that he avoided, which he was going to get an absolute scolding at from PP members about the hate speech bill, about the legislation being prioritised to make sure that licensing laws were going to be reformed and that you'd have nightclubs and some bars remaining open to 6 a.m. that nobody wants, may I just say, between the Vitners, the PP meetings, Fine Gael party members themselves. And I think if Simon Harris gives an indication that he's going to move away from prioritising those matters and will focus on Garda recruitment, money in people's pockets, addressing the housing crisis and reducing waiting lists. We've over 100,000 children on waiting lists across the country. And if he makes small movements and shows that I'm not actually going to prioritise these things that Leo Varadkar was looking at, that might just be
I believe
enough.
He will do that.
Yes.
And I think it will make a difference. I mean, the housing, what he will move away from is the idea that there are simple populist solutions. Because that is the narrative that's out there. The reality is we are building more houses. There's an economy that's flying. I mean, Mark Redmond has an interesting piece in the Business Post on that. I mean, if you don't have a good economy, you can't build any houses.
I do want to go back a bit because Mark gave an expression of such total exasperation at my last question that I wanted him to give voice to it. Slightly facetiously, I am suggesting that his enthusiasm doesn't make a difference. You see that as naivety?
No, it's not that I see what you've said as naive. The point is that anybody who expects somebody to appear at anybody's doorstep with a solution to the housing crisis is coming forth with an image that is too simplistic and is nonsense, frankly. And if you want to include yourself in that group, then feel free to so do.
I didn't want to say that.
Okay. The reality is every Western country is struggling with a housing crisis. It doesn't matter where you go across Europe, Australia. Talking to somebody in Melbourne the other night, price has gone up by 2.5 times the US. So these problems are happening all over the place. That's not to in any way downplay the pain that people, particularly those in the nesting generation who want to settle down. As one person said to me recently, he said, I don't understand what it is that your age group don't understand. He said, I'm 29. I want to walk my son to the garbage. Now, he neither has a son nor a garbage to which he can walk because of where he lives, right? So we have to understand the level of pain and suffering that, that this is causing in terms of people's life history and desire for certain chapters in life. But equally, the state and the people, we have to understand as well. You can solve the housing crisis, not today, not tomorrow, but over a period of time, by taking significant action that will impact on property rights. You turn around and you say, we're having a constitutional referendum that will go back to the Kenny report in 73 and do all the things that Kenny said, that you'd buy farming land for land price plus a minor additional fee. You would build houses on it, and those houses would then be sold at reasonable rates to people. We too many times in life in this country, we don't want the disease and nor do we want the cure.
Well, text certainly not a referendum on those issues. It won't work, Mark. That's
the point.
For sure.
That's the point.
It won't work.
I know it won't work.
There's a text to 53106. Leo lacked the will to solve the housing crisis. To solve it, you build more houses. The land, the money and the workers are there. The only thing missing is the will to do it. Another, can we please have a bit of balance in the discussion around the appointment of Simon Harris? The recent discussion has been like a Fine Gael love-in. Let's remember that Fine Gael have been in government since 2011 and responsible for failure in all key ministries such as health, housing and justice. Simon Harris does not have a good record himself in any of his ministries, and a number of people asking about Simon Harris's previous promises in ministries that he held and his capacity to deliver on all those. I should say, by the way, that out of 11 o'clock we're going to be speaking to Ivana Bacic from the Labour Party about their conference last night. If you do want to get in touch, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or of course you can get us 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. In the meantime, we'll update you on the cash machine.
Your chance to win big. News Talk's cash machine.
So we've had our 30th winner of the year so far. We're looking for number 31. The amount that you need to know if you want to be number 31 is €50,214.53. To enter, you can text PLAY to 57557. That's 57557. And if it's you, we call back after 3 p.m. tomorrow. Remember, you have to... Not tomorrow. Yes, it is tomorrow. Just checking. During Sean's program, you answer your phone within 5 rings, tell us the prize amount, and you win the money. It's over 18s only. Texts are €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You're playing across the Go Live network of stations, and terms and conditions are on newstalk.com. There is one other interesting political matter, which is Verona Murphy, Michael McDougall and Ivan Yates all gathering together in what looks like the possibility of an upsurge that may lead to a political party. Not a sentence I thought I would ever say. We'll get to that after this break. Now, my panel this morning is Mark Hennessy, the Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times, Ciara Phelan, senior political correspondent with the Irish Examiner, and Francis Fitzgerald, Fine Gael MEP from Dublin. And just briefly, we might touch on Verona Murphy, Michael McDougall and Ivan Yates, though Ivan Yates in a corporate capacity rather than a political capacity, at an event that looks to be gaining some momentum.
I was shocked. I thought Ivan Yates was going back into politics, but he was the MC there. Impressive event. I mean, 700 people, Verona Murphy, Michael McDougall seemingly talking about her taking on the establishment. Now, this
just come in on that microphone a bit there.
Somebody who's quite an establishment person himself, Michael McDougall, suddenly being presented almost and impressed by somebody he sees as anti-establishment. But I imagine...
He tapped into something with the referendums, though, didn't he?
What?
He did.
He had a very strong leadership role there, no doubt about that. But the key point here is, you know, everybody's watching to see if they can be the power brokers in a government whenever there's an election, you know, that if they can be the balance of power, and the potential of this group to be that, to be one of those players is obviously what's attractive to this group and which may come together under some sort of an alliance, but it's early days.
Does it go a little bit, Mark, to your point about rural Ireland and connecting with it?
Well, it does. And going back to the point that your texter before the break mentioned about Fine Gael's failures in power, and the list is long. But one of the problems that they have going into the next election is the whole issue of simply being in power since 2011. You do get to that fatigue element, and particularly in an Irish context where so many of the faces, say, unlike Britain, where they've gone through hundreds of people over the last, since 2010, in terms of political office, here ministers tend to last longer, therefore their faces are around for longer, and there is that fatigue factor. And there is no doubt that the point we were making about Heather and rural Ireland is in a very, very cantankerous mood, and oftentimes with damn good justification. And
did
they
do see,
want to be listened to.
John Major's great line about the Conservatives now having a cottage industry and creating former leaders to take up parliamentary seats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here, I like the one with Toby Elwood, who was talking about whether they'd need jumbos to take refugees to Rwanda. And he said, at the end of it, he said, we'll need a Cessna to take the Conservative Party.
On the point that Mark was making, Fiona Murphy, which she was in Enniscorthy launching essentially this rally and trying to launch 10 local election candidates, 700 people in a room. It's a great turnout for her. And the message that she gave was, we are not populists, we are realists. And in Wexford, we are sending a clear message to Dublin, hands off. And it touches on the point that Mark has just made there in terms of the need for Fine Gael to re-engage and connect with rural Ireland. Michael McDougall, obviously delighted with himself off the back of the success of the referendum. Is this sign to come? Is he going to run in the general election? Who knows?
Texts say the problem is not just the cost of houses. There's no regulations around the building of houses. It appears that someone can make an overestimated guess for how much a house can cost. There needs to be basic regulation. It's not just building, although that is a basic part of it. Another, please stop everybody or stop these politicians repeating the mantra of how great the economy is. Francis Gerald, this refers to you commenting on how positive the economy was. Everyone is living month to month with financial stress in every home. What economy do they live in?
Well, the economy that gives us full employment is very important to recognise. You cannot have any social services, you can't put money into health or education or anywhere else if you haven't got the money in the bank and an economy that works. So that's basic. And that is one of the strengths of what Fine Gael have done in government, no question of that. So it's critical. It's very easy to dismiss it and say, what economy? That's not to deny that the cost of living is a huge issue for people. Inflation, which we have to bring down, makes life very difficult. And also the housing crisis, that's a reality. But one of the things we have to do, I believe, is fast track that planning bill, which is held up in committee with endless amendments. And being held up there, I would say, that will make a difference to housing as well. So there's very practical things like that that can make a difference.
One more on the issue of Leo's Varadkar, or Leo Varadkar's departure and Simon Harris's arrival. And he gets the coronation, the appointment, whatever the correct term is. That's this afternoon in Athlone, isn't that right?
Yes, he should be Fine Gael party leader after today.
A text say, Anton, politics has become a very ugly game, and I have to wonder if the persistent vitriol from the public and sometimes media has played a significant role in Leo's decision. As for looking to the future, how can a health system that has no performance measurement of its staff improve on performance? How can we build more houses when the planning process is a mess and anybody can object and our opposition party TDs have a penchant for objecting to new bills? To the first part of that, do you think that's any part of his decision? He seemed always to have
a Absolutely.
Do you?
I do. When I watched Leo Varadkar give a speech, he was a broken man. He got very emotional, and a lot of people actually often criticise him for lacking empathy, for having no emotion, describe him as robotic. It's probably the most emotional and, I suppose, on a human level, to see what he was really like. Look, everybody knows his relationship has been under the spotlight. Anything that he does, what he has in his shopping basket. I had him on a podcast last year and he said, you know, well, it's great when he gets abroad because nobody knows really who he is. No one's looking over their shoulders to look at what's in his shopping basket. We have seen so many TDs.
Did he not know that's what he was getting into?
He did, but you can't deny, Antoine, that there has been definitely a savageness towards the abuse that he's received on social media for, you know, for many different reasons, probably his sexuality, his background. A lot of people would say, you know, that some of the criticism's deserved because of things, choices that he's made. Others would argue against that. But what is really worrying is, and, you know, Simon Harris, actually, I noticed this during the week when he was first came to realisation that he was going to be Fine Gael leader. He did mention that he, going forward, he was not going to partake in any of this vicious attacks. He'll do it with civility, although not afraid to be calling out the likes of Sinn Féin under, you know, some what they would believe, Fine Gael believe, the populist stances that they take. But he, I can imagine he will definitely roll back on the personalised attacks that we've seen, which have led to a lot of TDs leaving the Dáil. Like Ciarán Cannon mentioned it.
I have no doubt that the private and the social media aspects that he's been subject to are part of the decision. You know, yeah. I mean, it's a political decision, but I've no doubt when you come to a decision like that, you're looking at the overall effect that the life in politics has on you. And, you know, he's had to take a lot on social media, ignores, I suppose, most of it. But it's bound to take its toll. So it feeds into a decision like the one he's
especially
made.
Especially when you're coming outside your home.
Yeah, yes. it's not just Leo Varadkar. And undoubtedly, he did take dogs abuse. But the reality is that every politician of every party, including Sinn Féin, including the independents and a whole variety of other people at local and national level are taking dogs abuse every day of the week online. Often, most of the time, they have no idea where it's coming from. And it creates a certain level of insecurity in all of them. And if any of us were taking it on a daily basis in our working lives, and many people in press do, these things do come at a cost. And equally, you do have a situation where Pauls and others need to stand up and go on the front foot. And on the point that we were talking about earlier, the lesson in life for all of them is Gary Gannon. Remind us, and if any of you haven't
Mark's
seen this,
very keen on this.
I'm very keen on this. I regard this, I have to say, as my supreme political.
Just a warning: there may be strong language coming up. Go on, Mark.
Gannon was the Social Democrats TD was approached at an event by Gavin Pepper, who said he said, "I suppose you'd call me a far right agitator." To which Gannon replied, "He said, no, I think you're a gobshite," and that I think is deserving of becoming one of the great political phrases in Irish political life, and it should become
response.
A football chat.
Great response.
On that note, let us park politics for a while, but stay with the theme of public attention, public eye, public scrutiny, and social media. Because, of course, what we discovered on Friday was the answer to the question that has been literally a globally asked question. When you say that, people say, "Oh, it shouldn't." But the reality is, it was grist to the mill of the late night TV shows in the US. It trended on most social media for several weeks. That question being, where is Kate Middleton and what is the issue? And we saw on Friday she came out and did a video explaining her medical condition and asking for privacy, which undoubtedly she will probably get, or at least get a better significant amount of than she had been getting. It raises, first of all, a question, Francis, about why did they let it run so long? Or is it that the social media tinfoil hat brigade are to blame?
It's a bit of both. I think they did leave it run for a long time. Now, by Kate's reckoning, probably not long enough. She wanted that space to explain it to her children. Mm-hmm. And that's very understandable because she probably only got the diagnosis a few weeks ago. They thought the operation to begin with was just a normal abdominal operation, turned out to be cancer. So the shock of that, telling your children in the ordinary personal terms, that's certainly weeks of work. The social media, and I guess the media overall, time frame is much shorter than that. So this gap emerged into which there were all these conspiracy theories, which must have been really hard for them. And then the issue of the photograph emerged, which added fuel to the conspiracy theory. But there's so many apologies in the paper today from people, you know, writers like Sarah Vine, who had written an article a number of weeks ago, the Kardashians, I mean, you name it, people who were quick to jump and join the conspiracy theories. But what I find interesting is that the conspiracy theories are even now continuing. You know, I've heard people saying the video isn't real. But the BBC went out. I was in a taxi yesterday and I happened to say to the taxi driver about Kate Middleton, I said, you wouldn't know what to believe. I thought, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
fascinating. This.
By the way, I should say, Francis Fitzgerald, FG MEP, Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times, and Ciara Phelan, senior political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Mark.
Yeah, but that's the whole point. I mean, first of all, a whole clatter load of people have behaved poorly. Anybody who's had the experience of friends dealing with cancer, and particularly where there are kids, knows the kind of dynamic that takes place within that family, where the fear and the challenges that they're facing, and they're trying to look after the kids, and to be doing that in the public arena. You know, there are things we don't need to know, and the things to which we don't have any right to know. And this is one of them. But on the wider front...
Why didn't they say that? That's the. I mean, I'm not.
But how could they say it? You know, how can you say? And I'm no defender of the royal family, right? But you take any family who is remotely in the public eye, where the wife and mother has some form of cancer, and there are young children. Like, you know, you don't need to be the brain of Britain to realise that there are a whole host of issues within that family that need to be dealt with, that what people can accept on a Friday, they won't be able to accept on a Monday, that there's a journey you have to take people on before they come to
And
term.
Also, sorry to cut across you, Mark, but they actually, the palace put out that Princess Kate was actually in hospital having surgery.
Yeah.
So they put that news out there. We may never have known about it. Yeah. If that wasn't the case, look, I'm sure, you know, people working in the hospital would make it aware.
But the broader point, Ciara, is that all of this feeds into what is an attempt by forces, and there are forces at foot who are trying to do this, where you try to destroy trust in every institution that's there. And no matter what is said, you come up with an alternative explanation. And you see this with the way in which media has been attacked in the state, where people, they don't even make necessarily specific complaints about the Examiner, the Times, the Indo, RT, News Talk, whatever. They just say, X is crap. And they just, it's a drumbeat, boom, ba boom, ba boom. And that keeps coming at people. And if you say it often enough, a significant percentage of people will accept it. You know, as I say, no defender of the royal family, no great interest in the subject one way or the other. But there are times when families deserve for everybody else to bugger off and leave them alone.
Mm. But the other point it brings up for me is this whole question of disinformation and what it's going to be like going into all of the elections around the world. We have sort of 70 elections around the world this year. And, you know, the public do get hold of this social media angle. The disinformation is being pumped in by different forces. So everyone is going to have to be on high alert and get the corrections in early. This is very important.
You can't correct stuff like this because it moves so fast.
But that's
the principal responsibility is for each citizen of a state to ask themselves, where have I got my information from? And is the source that gave me this information previously reliable?
It's media education, really, isn't it?
Exactly.
And that's a hard one.
And it's not to say that media are perfect. Yeah. I'm not arguing that for a moment. I'm profoundly conscious of our sins. But we have to have a point where, would you believe this if it was some clown at the end of a bar on a wet Friday night who's half cut is telling you this? Would you believe it then? Well, why should you believe it if you see it on
screen? But let's face it, the internet has been a wild west. Yeah. That's the reality. And the rules and regulations are coming in very slowly. They are there now for about the last 6 months with the legislation, but it's still out of control. But there's two other points I'd like to make, Anton. One is that more and more young people are being affected by cancer. And this certainly illustrates this to an
extraordinary... This is in relation to Kate Middleton's diagnosis.
This is Kate, going back to Kate. More and more young people. So the whole thing about minding your own health is just for young people as well. Cancer, often seen as something that affects older people. We now know you really do have to be very alert. And I have to say, the headline in the Times, I think it's very interesting. The double cancer diagnosis for the King and the Princess of Wales has brought them closer as they balance private struggles and public life. I think it really captures that's what it's about.
Well, it's interesting, just, private, on, just for one second, know, on those cancer rates.
And public, private this, struggles and public life.
This is the thing that I might actually get Ciara Kelly's view on when she's talking to us, but later on. If you look at the young person rates between the ages of 14 and 49, cancer rates in 1990 versus 2020, so over a 30-year period, breast cancer, this is incident rate per 100,000, breast cancer from 9.6 to 13.7. Colorectal 3.5 to 5.7. Kidney cancers 1 to 1.5. So across the board, 50% increases, 30% increases. Big jumps in young person
cancer. No young person ever expects to be hit with a cancer diagnosis. It's difficult at any age. But I think people just don't expect it to hit young people, but it does. So there's a public education piece there, and it's a bit about minding your own health, even as a younger person.
Kira, sorry, I cut across.
There was one particular angle, actually, on the Kate Middleton story that I was struck by, and I did see some of it being discussed in some of the papers. When she edited, well, claims that she edited the photo.
That was the statement then that came out. She said she did it.
I can't believe the palace actually let her. Well, I don't know whose idea it was. We don't know how it works in there. It seems to be a bit of a circus. But the fact that she was going through all of this, probably considering, am I going to put out a statement? To let her go out and say, it was me, I actually edited the photo. Crazy idea.
It says something about the way they manage the media or don't manage it, doesn't it?
At a time when the woman's health is, you know, of priority, to put, essentially so place serious. The blame. Yeah. And I don't believe...
thing, to allow the picture to go out in the first place, knowing that the chances that if AP discovers that they have syndicated out this picture, they'll kill it. And that'll draw immense attention to the issue.
I don't believe that Kate Middleton was sitting at home editing a photo in Photoshop. Do any of you? No. Honestly, do you really think the princess
she has a huge interest in photography, but having said that, why was she left in that position?
Yeah.
There is other stuff that we need to talk about. I'm going to force the guys to discuss the mounting of antlers in the Oireachtas.
We're all getting up to leave.
You really won't.
They may actually mutiny, but I'm going to give it a shot after the break. A text to say, let's not forget rural Dublin. In other words, Dubliners outside D4. Go to any McDonald's or walk around a park and chat with ordinary dubs. Same concern as rural Ireland. Crime, immigration, too much woke. Politicians need to ditch their advisors and get a few ordinary, intelligent people on 20 to 50 grand a year. Listen to them. Another, I'm sick of hearing that Leo left because of abuse related to his sexuality. It was because of his abject failure as a leader, nothing to do with his sexuality. Another, if Leo didn't want people looking in his shopping basket, he shouldn't have posted photos of the contents of his fridge on social media. He brought it on himself, as does any politician who uses social media. Yeah.
There's definitely elements of truth to that.
53106 at a cost of 30 cents, 087-1400-106 on WhatsApp back after this break. I have with me Mark Hennessy, Ireland Britain editor with the Irish Times, Francis Fitzgerald, Fine Gael MEP for Dublin, and Ciara Phelan, senior political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. And Ciara, there is a story that's in a couple of the papers this weekend which relates to work undertaken in the Houses of the Oireachtas on behalf of elected members. And most of it is very minor stuff like, can you put batteries in my clock or can you fix my radiator? But in amongst it is, can you mount antlers on the wall of my office?
Housing Minister Darragh O'Brien is going to be absolutely kicking himself over whoever put the details and requests in an email to a member.
Darragh O'Brien has antlers in his office.
He didn't expect it to be in the newspapers today, I'm sure.
Or a picture of it, I tell you that.
What's a young male politician doing with antlers on his wall? We'll have to get an explanation.
I'm not sure. My understanding is that he may have been gifted them. And they're up on his wall in his office.
I mean, I've been given a lot of stuff. I don't bring it into the office and put it on the wall.
Plain office. I've been in the office for an interview with him previously, as your journalists would go in and do interviews in there. It's quite plain office. I've seen them up on the wall.
You've seen the antlers?
I've seen them up on the wall. It's
like a throwback. It's very old and aged, I suppose.
In among the other things as well was the Shannon Hurlock, Jerry Buttimer. He wanted a small mirror in his office so he could check to make sure his tie.
Ah, that's fair enough.
Why wouldn't you buy your own mirror and bring it in yourself?
I have never seen anybody absorb themselves into the wallpaper as well as Mark is currently doing. The rising above a story, Mark, that you're doing at the moment is very impressive. Would you like to weigh in on the antlers or shall we move on?
No, I'm bored. I'm sorry.
Final thing then that I want to get your views on, and Francis Fitzgerald, you might have a view on this as a former Minister for Justice. We saw yesterday, or on Friday rather, that Enoch Burke was ahead in front of the courts. He was in front of the courts because the judge wanted to let him out for Easter to reflect on his situation and maybe see was there a resolution. We got the usual thing that we get from Enoch Burke and from the family, which was a tirade at the judge, and he found himself back in clink. He's now, I think, 300 days into this. What do you do in a situation where everybody is looking at this saying, we can't have a man permanently jailed for breaching a court order, nor can we let him out unless he absolves himself from the breach of the court? So how do we resolve any of this?
Well, the answer is in his own hands. I mean, justice will do what justice has to do. The law is clear. If he's not willing to abide by the rules that are being set, he'll go back into prison. It happens to other people too. It's a choice that he can make to change the way he deals with the situation. The law isn't going to change.
But do we leave a man like this sit in jail for years and years? I mean, he's already up to the kind of judicial penalty that you would get for a criminal assault. He's in there for nearly a year. Is it tenable to say, fine, he is stubborn enough to keep doing it? Do we leave it be for 5 years?
Well, it's one of these issues to which there is no solution. I mean, you can't have a system whereby the state's authority is ignored, rejected. Equally, if you're dealing with somebody who is going in on what he sees as a point of principle, and he's prepared clearly to accept an extraordinary level of pain and discomfort in the facts of it. I don't know. I mean, if we started charging hotel bed night rates, perhaps things might improve. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is to it. I mean, you're dealing with him and with a family who are extraordinarily focused on the issues that they believe to an extent that the vast majority of people will find unreasonable and unrealistic. And what do you do when you're dealing with people like that? I mean, they will hold their opinions.
Yeah, if you're breaching, you know, the situation, that's the law. And like Francis said, it's up to Enoch Burke himself what his future holds for him and whether he stays locked up or not. But there's two things that are infuriating about the situation. One, we have a massive prison overcrowding in the country. I remember back in the summer when we had the really hot weather, there was two or three people in cells. It was a health and safety issue. It was being raised in the Department of Justice. That's going to be, you know, a massive issue in the coming weeks as well. And secondly, the cost of this to the taxpayer must be enormous. And that's what the public, I'd say, are more absolutely furious about. How much is it costing the state to keep him locked up behind bars?
And to continue having judicial actions and reviews and all of the rest
of it. A lot of money is the answer.
Yeah, a fortune. Yeah. And it is, it's an act of gross self-indulgence, quite frankly.
Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times. Ciara Phelan, senior political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. And Francis Fitzgerald, FG MEP for Dublin. Thank you all very much. Just to bring you the critical text in relation to all the matters we've been discussing. Relio's fridge, the worst part of the scandal, Anton. There were no lids on the Tupperware batches.
Oh, God, no.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.